Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Let's get to the docket. First, the Chad Daybell trial is officially being moved. Barry Morphew goes on the offensive. It looks like the mystery regarding Brian Laundrie is over. Don't kill people. Eat more moon pies. This is why we set no bonds in homicide cases. Lori and Massimo are on the move again. A real-life Dexter, and finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. Thanks for watching. As you can probably tell, that's right, we're not in the Crime Talk studio. I am on the road. Yesterday afternoon, jumped in Crime Talk 1, headed over to the Western Slope here in Colorado for a case. And, well, like all good plans, they don't always turn out the way you hope so. Anyway, have a little window before I have to go back to court this afternoon, so we're getting this done. All right, if you haven't done so already, please hit the subscribe button. Hit that little bell so you receive notifications. And as always, leave me a comment. Now, and if you can't watch us on YouTube or Facebook, you can always listen to us in all past episodes at your favorite podcasting app. All right, let's get to the docket. First, the Chad Daybell matter. As we all know, the court granted the motion for a change of venue filed by Chad Daybell through his attorney. It was kind of agreed to by the prosecution, but they wanted to have their cake and eat it too, which was, yeah, we think we need to get a different jury, not from our jurisdiction, but let's just bus in a jury and that'll be a lot easier. Well, the court said that's not gonna work. And in any kind of change of venue type of situation, the district court then usually sends the request up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ultimately agrees with the change of venue as far as location. And in this case, the Chief Justice of the Idaho Supreme Court, G. Richard Bevin, signed an order transferring the case from Fremont, the 7th Judicial District, to Ada County, which is the 4th Judicial District, which includes Boise. Why is that a good choice? Larger jury pool. So everybody kind of got a little bit of what they wanted in this particular case. Hopefully it will mean that we're going to have a trial sooner rather than later and get done with the delays. Let's move along in that case. All right, next on the docket, Barry Morphew. Okay, Tuesday night, we were doing our live show and the news broke that Barry Morphew, through his attorneys, a firm called Fisher and Breisland, B-Y-R-I-A-L-S-E-N. They have offices in Denver and they have a New York office. Well, they filed a notice of intent to sue, and they are attempting to, or going to sue, a lot of people involved in the case as it relates to the prosecution of Barry Morphew. Now, it's required to give a notice of intent to sue so that everybody's put on notice. Well, there are several people being sued at the Chaffee County Sheriff's Department. The sheriff himself, which is John Speezy, Andrew Rotrich, the undersheriff, Detective Robin Burgess, Sergeant Claudette Heist-Julian, Sergeant William Plackner, Deputy Molyneux, Deputy Brown, Carrico, Himshot, and Corporal Investigator Alex Walker, both in his capacity as an investigator with Chaffee County Sheriff and as an investigator with the 11th Judicial District DA's office. Several agents Graham, Cahill, Atkinson, Honeycutt, Kobach, Adams, are all being sued from the Colorado Bureau of Investigation and from the District Attorney's Office. The DA herself, Linda Stanley, Jeff Lindsay, Aaron Pembleton, Mark Hurlberg, Dan Edwards, and Alex Walker. And then finally, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Jonathan Grossing and Ken Harris. Now, what is they suing for? Well, they're not given a dollar amount because according to their allegations is that, and this is a quick summary here, It says that Mr. Morpheus basically has had his fundamental legal rights under Colorado and the Colorado Constitution, including but not limited to his rights under Frank v. Delaware and the applicable sections of the Colorado Constitution. He's been unlawfully arrested. The prosecution has withheld exculpatory evidence, unlawfully detained, malicious prosecution, false imprisonment, false and misleading statements in applications for warrants, abuse of process, defamation, invasion of privacy, extreme and outrageous conduct, intentional infliction of emotional distress, violation of substantive and procedural due process rights, and intentional interference with prospective advantage. It says that the defendant's conduct has caused significant injuries and damages to Mr. Morpheus. Mr. Morpheus is being forced to spend astronomical amounts of money to defend against the charges against him that are false, without merit, groundless, and defamatory. Mr. Morpheus also lost his ability to work and support himself and his daughters as a result of the false charges, and due to the current bond conditions, is unable to leave Chaffee County and is essentially unemployable in the county due to press conferences and podcasts instigated and carried out by the district attorney and sheriffs, and has suffered grave emotional distress. Cases like this are apparently difficult to precisely value, as much of the damages sustained is not subject to precise evaluation and calculation, and it will be determined by a jury should this case proceed to trial. They are alleging that Mr. Morpheus's damages are extensive, and due to the nature of the defendant's conduct and the fact that the emotional stress will continue for the rest of his life. Now, what is the gist of this intentionally withholding exculpatory information? Well, that was the DNA evidence. Basically, and we'll try to give you the quick summary, obviously, you know, there was preliminary hearings that were held back on August 23rd and September 17th. And then on September 26th, 2021, after the hearing had concluded and after September 17th, 2021, when the court ruled on the probable cause and proof evident presumption great determination, the DA conveniently produced more discovery. This content-rich discovery apparently showed that on August 2nd of 2021, contrary to Agent Cahill's testimony, he and Deputy District Attorney DA Jeff Lindsay, Sheriff's Office Commander Alex Walker, and others participated in a conference call concerning the investigation of the CODIS sex offender matches from the DNA casework from Suzanne's glove box. Agent Cahill knew when he testified that the DNA from Suzanne's glove box matched DNA collected in two Arizona sex assault cases. The discovery revealed that based upon Agent Cahill's investigation, that there is a possible serial sex offender from Tempe, Arizona, that matches the DNA of Suzanne Morpheus' glove box. However, there was no testimony regarding the Phoenix match and the known individual who retained a lawyer in August of 2021 when approached by law enforcement and Deputy District Attorney DA Lindsay. Agent Cahill did not reveal what he knew of the exculpatory information regarding a possible perpetrator of Suzanne's disappearance involved in the Tempe match. Agent Cahill misrepresented what he knew, intentionally omitted exculpatory evidence, and the numerous DAs present and advisory witnesses who knew that the exculpatory evidence on August 23rd, 2021 allowed him to misrepresent the evidence and failed to produce exculpatory evidence prior to the critical hearing. Additionally, the government agents identified have conspired to commit fraud upon the court by withholding exculpatory evidence from the defense and the preliminary hearing. Wow. Wow. Okay, we talked about this. The prosecution always has a duty to disclose exculpatory evidence because the prosecutors and the police investigating the case have an obligation to make sure that the evidence is turned over. If it's not turned over, this is how cases get thrown out and people have been sent to prison wrongfully for years and years and years. So I guess the thing that I would expect is this is a notice of intent to sue. But now the prosecutors, instead of focusing on their case and the business hand, now have to deal with an investigation, preserving evidence to defend themselves, which may create a conflict in this particular case. There's probably going to be a motion for sanctions as it relates to the same allegation filed in the criminal case, where things are going to get, well, ugly. I told you early on, Morphew hired very, very good attorneys. My guess is, and based upon this filing, guess what? They are going scorched earth. They truly believe that their client is innocent. And frankly, it looks like there may be some evidence that is in fact exculpatory. And if the prosecution withheld that evidence, ooh, not gonna be good. Not going to be good at all. We'll see where things lead. All right, let's get to the rest of the docket today. Next on the docket, it looks like the great mystery as it relates to Brian Laundrie may be over. That's right. Everybody's heard. We talked about it really quick yesterday when it was breaking. Yep, it looks like they found remains and some personal items that may in fact be Brian Laundrie. Nobody's going to say for sure because, well, let's face it, they have to do some testing, because if this body's been out in the swamp for the last 30 days, there's probably not much left to it except for the bones. And they're probably going to have to do some testing to determine if that is in fact Brian Laundrie, but sounds like it may be. I think the greater mystery is, wow, what a coincidence. The parents just happened to go looking and find some personal items and then ultimately find Mr. Brian Laundrie there as well. Wow, what a coincidence. You never know. All right, next on the docket, don't kill people. Maybe have a moon pie or something. That's right. That's what Sheriff Grady Judge of the Polk County Sheriff's Office in Florida had a message for killers the other day. Apparently, homicides are increasing in the second half of the year. So the sheriff went out and said, hey, just chill out, drink a 7-Up, eat a moon pie, quit murdering people. Now, I don't know if you've ever eaten a moon pie. They're not in all parts of the country. Usually whenever I've had one, it's been like in Tennessee or something. It's kind of a Southern thing. But, you know, chill out. I agree. Have a chill pie. Like we mentioned the other night in our live program, don't kill people. It's that simple. I just don't get it, why it's so difficult, right? Well, Sheriff Judge responded to the reports that 34 people had been killed this year and already equal to last year's total. And of those 27 that had been murdered, according to the sheriff's office, 23 of the victims had been killed since June. Now, Sheriff Judge said, what's that all about? Just calm down. Quit murdering your friends and your family. I know that's a novel idea for some people. Our murder rate is up, with a total crime rate is down, but even the demand for services, well, it's quite an angst. So you have to give the sheriff some credit, just saying the way it is. All right, next on the docket. You know, this is why in homicide cases, we set bonds at no bond, because, well, people disappear. Let's take a listen to this story. So authorities are still searching for a Texas man who allegedly killed his wife a year ago, all right? Trent Van Pascal allegedly waited to kill his wife, Savannah Pascal, in the bathroom of their master bedroom and ultimately shot her. Now, Trent allegedly posted a video on YouTube before the shooting saying, I told her not to mess with me, not to mess with my emotions. He allegedly apologized to his young children in a recording captured by his neighbors that went to YouTube viral. Sounds like a confession to me, right? Well, as part of Trent's bond release, he was ordered to wear an ankle monitor because that's going to keep somebody there, right? Well, Trent posted a $500,000 bond after being arrested and was charged in connection with Savannah's death. Guess what? He jumped bond. And on April 13th, authorities believed he somehow got the monitor off, which is not that difficult, ladies and gentlemen. It's a leather strap on most of those ankle monitors. He cut it off. It didn't send an alert to authorities. So free of the ankle monitor, police alleged that Trent went from Houston car dealership and took a black Chevy Tahoe for a test drive. They know that he visited the dealership because he was captured on surveillance tape. During the drive, he allegedly threatened a salesman at knife point and ordered him to leave. Now, in the meantime, the U.S. Marshals are continuing to search for Trent, who is obviously still on the run. His bonds have been revoked. He is charged with murder, aggravated assault, and unlawful possession of a firearm in Galveston County. He's also charged with the aggravated assault of a peace officer in Harris County after he allegedly pulled a gun on deputies who were trying to apprehend him after his wife was shot. He also faces charges of the aggravated robbery in Houston. That's why we keep people in custody, ladies and gentlemen, because when they think they're never going to get out, they panic. They think they have nothing to lose. They go on these multi-jurisdictional crime sprees or don't come back. Just saying how it is, ladies and gentlemen. All right, Lori Massimo, they're on the move. The convicted couple, Lori Loughlin and Massimo Giannulli, they filed a request with the court for permission to take another two-week trip down to San Juan Cabo next month, where they apparently plan to attend a wedding. This will be the second time that the pair has traveled to Mexico since being released from federal prison, but they're on a period of what they call supervised release, which is basically parole, and you can't leave the jurisdiction, let alone the country, without permission from the court. So the court will probably grant that permission because, well, he's done it before. Why not do it again? Our next story on the docket, we have a real-life Dexter here, a Jason Vukovic, all right, who apparently attacked three registered sex offenders in Alaska and described himself as an avenging angel seeking justice, was sentenced to 23 years in prison for assault and robbery on Monday. Now, Jason Vukovic tracked down and assaulted three sex offenders listed on the National Sex Offender Registry in 2016. And Vukovic, who was born in Anchorage as to a single mother, claims he never really met his biological father. But Larry Lee Fulton, his mother's husband, adopted him when he was 4 years old. And instead of being a guardian, it's alleged that Larry physically and sexually abused Vukovic. Vukovic said at his sentencing, "When I reflected upon my childhood experience, I felt compelled to take action. I took matters in my own hands and physically assaulted three pedophiles." However, the prosecutors argued that this was not an excuse for Vukovic's actions in targeting and attacking these strangers. And now Vukovic was arrested the night he allegedly hammered a sex offender's skull who was sleeping when Vukovic terrorized his house. Vukovic, according to reports, broke into the victim's home, beat him with a fist or a hammer, and then stole the belongings before fleeing. The sex offenders had obviously gone through the legal system, received their sentencing, and registered their names on the sex offender registry, where Vukovic discovered their addresses, according to the court. The court told Mr. Vukovic that the registry was there to keep the community safe, not to create a way of finding people and carrying out your own brand of justice. Now, a lot of people may say, hey, this is appropriate, but in this particular case, one man's skull was cracked like a peanut. The other two individuals were severely injured and one had a brain injury. 23 years is a pretty light sentence considering, well, I have clients that are getting similar sentences for drugs. So obviously you can't go around doing vigilante justice, ladies and gentlemen. You have to go through the court systems. And even though you don't like people that molest children, I don't think you're going to find anybody that does like those individuals, but you can't go around beating them up unless, of course, you're willing to face the consequences in court. So once again, don't kill people. Don't beat people up that have not attacked you. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Please meet Jordan Thomas. Well, he appeared for arraignment on a battery charge and was arrested for striking his victim with a very unusual weapon, right? Investigators say that Thomas was inside the Indian River County Courthouse yesterday morning when he grabbed a signage letter from the blackboard in the courtroom, and he threw it at the victim, striking her with the letter G. G, the letter G. Thomas was arrested for battery and violated the terms of his pretrial release, which included having no contact with the victim. He's being held in the county jail with no bond. Only thing dumber than violating a protection order is violating the protection order in court where all the world can see that you're violating the protection order, let alone picking up a new charge. Mr. Thomas, I think you have catapulted yourself to the top of the dumb criminal contestants for the week thus far. We'll have one more tomorrow. and then we will go from there. You can, we'll have the subscribers announce the winners, and the winners will get some cool Crime Talk gear, no doubt. All right. Thanks for watching. Hopefully I can get my court appearance done today. Jump back in Crime Talk 1 and get back to Denver this afternoon. That is the goal. All right. Thanks for watching. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you next time on Crime Talk.